one of the most intimidating places in the world has to be JFK Airport in New York City. Maybe it's just that I've been detained and questioned there, but it seems like that whole airport is designed to intimidate people. And so from the moment you hop off the plane there, these big brooding police officers who stare at you as you shuffle past, and it seems like the only reason they've been asked to stand there is because they're a head taller than anyone else in existence. And then there are the queues. There are these endless queues going off in various directions, and eventually you don't even know why you're going where you're going, just that someone scary said to you, you must go that way. And then there are the cleaners. There are these cleaners all over the place busy cleaning, like Oompa Loompas everywhere, and it seems like they've been trained to give you the beady eye as you walk past, and eventually you're in the final little queue waiting to be interviewed by the customs official in their little cubicle, and you're waiting there, and there's a little old man in front of you with his three grandkids, and I mean, he's the picture of innocence. It's like Rion Kraivachen standing there, and you're saying, what could go wrong? And next thing you know, the interview carries on a little bit too long, and then the old man starts shuffling about a bit nervously, and then you see these beads of sweat running down his forehead, and the next thing you see the silent little red light above the cubicle going off, and from the wings come these customs officials that whisk the old man and the kids away, and then next thing you know, you're up and you're standing there, and by this stage you're a nervous wreck. You're so intimidated and you're busy doubting everything. You're doubting the legitimacy of you being there. You're doubting as to whether or not you've got anything to hide. You're doubting, you know, whether your passport's even real. Maybe it got swapped on the plane over. Maybe it's a counterfeit. And as you hand your passport over to the official, you're kind of just praying the silent prayer that as they take that passport underneath that UV light, that UV light would light up that passport like a Christmas tree and just show that it's not a counterfeit, but that it is a real passport, and that you are who the passport says you are, and that you are legitimately there. And so what's my point? Well, bear with me, I'll fill you in a second, but we're on a journey that we've called the Divine Warrior, in which we're looking at the armor of God that God promises to every believer. And so 2 weeks ago, as we kicked off this little journey, we spoke around the fact that there's a war that is busy being waged, and that God gives us this armor, this weaponry for us to come and wield. But in order for us to wield this weaponry, this armor properly, we need to understand the nature of this war. And we spoke about the fact that this war is not a physical war as much as it's a spiritual one. And our big idea was that the spiritual realm is real. Now, another aspect of war, or another element of the nature of war that we need to understand, is that for war to be war, there needs to be an enemy, an adversary. And so just as the spiritual realm is real, we need to understand that the enemy is also real. And so I think one of the greatest deceptions he's pulled among so many of us, so many people, including many of you watching, is to come and convince us and to convince you that he's not real, that he's simply a figment of our imagination. And so what we need to understand is that the enemy, the devil, is real. He's as real as the screen that you're staring at right now. And in fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, Peter says that your adversary, the devil, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. And so this reminds me of a cat we used to have. His name was the Gov. In fact, his full name was Alejandro Luciano Jorge Covermentos, but it was too long to fit on his name tag, so we called him the Gov. And the Gov was a great cat, and one of the things he used to do was he used to hide away behind a bush or in a tree or on the bed behind the cushions or behind the couch, and he'd wait there for someone to walk past. And when someone walked past, he'd launch himself out in full attack. But it wasn't kind of like a run in and a dab and a run away. It was like full on and aggressive. And he'd come and he'd wrap himself around you. And so God help you if you're wearing shorts and he got you on your calf muscle, because he'd wrap around you and then he'd kick out with his hind legs and he'd maul you. And then at the end of it, he wouldn't, you know, jump up and run away. He'd kind of jump up and then he'd arch his back around and he'd kind of just stare at you. And then he'd slink off and go away. And, you know, that'll teach you, come into my territory. So he was a great cat. And of course, this reminds me of the scripture that the devil is like a lion prowling. But what we need to understand is that the devil's not like a little kitty cat. The that comes in and, you know, attacks us. No, he's like a lion, like a 250 kg lion that is formidable. And he's not like a kitty cat that comes and mauls you, that you may be itchy the next day, or comes and taps you and runs away. And, oh, that was fun. No, he wants to devour you. And so there is a very real enemy with a very real agenda that is encompassed in this idea of devouring you. In fact, in John chapter 10, Jesus talks about the devil being like a thief who comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Now, that's not play and, you know, have fun together and do something cool. No, he wants to steal, kill, and destroy. Steal. He wants to steal from you. He wants to steal your innocence. He wants to kill. He wants to kill any sense of righteousness or justice inside of you. He wants to kill your life. He wants to destroy you, and he wants to do it in whatever way he can. In fact, in John chapter 8, Jesus comes and says, the devil is the father of all lies. And so just as Father Abraham was the father that every person in Israel descended from, that they could trace their lineage back to Abraham, so too we need to understand that every lie that we find in the world can find its way back to the devil, to Satan himself, for he is the father of all lies. And so we see a beautiful, stunning example of this in the book of Genesis. And so it's not beautiful as much as it's illuminating, and it shows us exactly what's going on here with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And so the devil disguises himself as a serpent. And he comes to Adam and Eve in the garden, and he comes and he sows doubt, and he says, did God really say that you can't eat of this fruit? Did God really say this? And so he comes and he sows doubt in that moment. And then he comes and he spits out a lie from the pit of hell, where he says, you know, if you eat this fruit, you'll be like God. And this is a lie from the pit of hell, because we need to know and understand that in chapter 2 and 1 of Genesis, it says there that God comes and creates mankind, that he creates Adam and Eve in his likeness, that they are his image bearers, that they are like God. And so from the pit of hell, the devil comes and he spews forth this lie, says, you'll be like God. If they already are like God. And so that mixture of doubt and that lie come and cause Adam and Eve to come and eat this fruit. And so what we need to understand is that the sin of the world doesn't enter the world through the flesh of a fruit as much as it does in that moment where they choose to believe a lie. And as they choose to believe that lie, they become servants to the one who proliferates that lie, namely the devil, and they become slaves to sin. And so what we need to understand is that this is the modus operandi of the devil, that he comes and he sows doubt, and then he comes and he casts lies into our midst, and he hopes that we'll take the bait and that we'll go for it. And so this is his modus operandi with Adam and Eve, and this is his modus operandi today still. And so we need to understand that there is a perpetual barrage of lies coming our way that stem from the very pit of hell, from Satan himself, that come and are designed to strike us with pinpoint accuracy at our weaknesses, where we're doubting and where we're uncertain, and cause us to question God and to question the goodness of God and to question who God says we are. And so Ephesians chapter 6 verse 13 says, therefore take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth. And so in a moment we're about to jump into the armor of God, but before we do that, I want you to notice that there's this phrase stand used 3 times in this little passage we've just read. And so it says there that you may be able to withstand the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. And then it says, stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth. And so what we need to understand is that the Apostle Paul is speaking to someone here that seems to have trouble standing, that they're a little bit wobbly, a little bit shaky, they're at risk of falling over. And the question is, who is he speaking to? Well, he's speaking to each and every one of us. You see, there is a war that is busy being waged. And we need to understand that the enemy is real, and he wants to come and he wants to topple us over. He wants to come and undermine us and wobble us and make sure that we fall over, and he's determined to do that. That's the war that's at hand. He wants to come and topple our lives over. He wants to come and steal, kill, and destroy. And the way that he will do that is by proliferating lies. He comes and he spews forth lies. And so we need to stand firm against the attacks of the enemy. And how do we do that? Well, we put on the armor of God. And so it says there, therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth. Which brings us to our very first element or component of the armor of God. It's the belt of truth. And so this last week I spent some time looking at resources, and one of the resources I was looking at was Priscilla Shira's Armor of God Bible study, and it was really good. And in the week, Kaz sent out a tweet mentioning this, and she referenced Priscilla Shira on it, and she got a reply, and I got a shout out from Priscilla saying, "Hey there, tell your hubby I say hi." And so Priscilla, if you're watching this, I just want to say thanks for your resources. They're amazing. They're really great. And so it was from her resources that I got this analogy that in the context of the fight, the very real fight we're fighting, in the war that is being waged, that the devil wants to come and with his lies come and topple us over and call us to be unable to stand, we need to understand that there is a weapon at our disposal, and that is the truth of God. You see, the truth of God is like that UV light at the airport that comes and shows up whether that passport is real or fake, or the UV light at the bank that comes and shows us whether those banknotes are or counterfeit or the real deal. And so too, in the context of this war that is busy being waged against us, we need to understand that the devil's primary onslaught against us are the lies that he'll proliferate in our lives, and our primary weapon to come and expose those lies is the light of God, the truth of God. And so 1 John chapter 5 says this: God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with him while we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. And so the truth of God is like a light, like a gigantic exposing light, that when you hold it up against that which looks normal and ordinary and everyday and even wholesome, it has an ability to expose that which is lurking beneath, that which is hiding behind. And so the truth of God is like a gigantic exposing light that can come and chase away darkness and shadow and come and expose lies and deceits and falsehoods for what they truly are. And so it was Augustine that said, "Where I find truth, there find I my God, who is the truth itself." And so it makes sense that if it was through lies that Adam and Eve found their way to the devil, and that if it was through lies that they found themselves in service to the devil, that we might through truth find our way to God, and that through truth we might come into the service of God. And so in John 14 verse 6, Jesus says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And so Jesus says there very clearly, "I am the truth." He is the truth. And so if you find truth, you found Jesus. And if you found Jesus, then you found your way back to the Father. And so Jesus is the great reverser that comes and takes the lies of the devil in the Garden of Eden and swaps them out for the truth of the cross. And so my big idea for today is very simple. It's this: that to love truth is to love God. To love truth is to love God. In fact, to love God is to love truth, because they're one in the same. But on the flip side, to love lies and deceits and falsehood and that which is counterfeit is to love the devil. And to love the devil is to love lies and deceits and falsehoods, because they're one in the same. And so what we need to realize that at its simplest, there are only two voices in this world. There are only two voices. There is the voice of God, and any voice that is the voice of God is an echo of his truth. And then there is the voice of the devil, and any voice that is the voice of the devil is an echo of the lies that he proliferates into this world. And so Proverbs 18 verse 21 says, the tongue has the power, this is the NIV, says the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruits. The Message says it even better. It says, words kill, words give life. They either poison or fruit. You choose. Remember, the thief has come to steal, kill, and destroy. We need to remember that the devil is absolutely committed to the long game in your life, that he's going to sit there relentlessly and endlessly bombarding you with lies, hoping that one or two will land on the soft underbelly of where you are most vulnerable, that you might believe them, that you might compromise, that you might crumble, that you might be devoured and destroyed by him. But on the flip side, we have Jesus, who has come to give life and to give life in abundance. And when we look at the power of God and the power of God's truth that emanates from him, it just far outstrips the power of the devil. And so we see the power of God and the power of his truth that emanates from his mouth and from his white hot holiness in the beginning of time, when he stands over the void and with the power of his word, he calls existence, all of creation, both seen and unseen, into existence. And so we need to understand, number one, that the power of God's truth far outweighs and far outstrips the power of the lies of the devil. And secondly, we need to understand that the lies of the devil do have power, but they only have power in so much as we choose to believe them. And so therein lies the battleground that we are fighting in. It's the battleground of the mind. It's the battleground in which we have to choose who we're going to believe. Are we going to believe the devil, or are we going to believe God? And so what should we do? The question is, what should we do now? Well, why don't we heed the advice of Paul, the Apostle Paul, in Ephesians 6:14, where he says, stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth, having fastened on the belt of truth. And so we're now going to enter into the armor of God, and we need to know and understand that there are two different metaphors at play here. The first is a physical metaphor of actual armor. And so in Paul's day, Roman soldiers were as common as cars are to us today. And so everyone then would have been able to imagine a Roman soldier and the armor that a Roman soldier would have been able to wear. And so as he spoke around the belt and the breastplate and the shoes and the shield and the helmet and the sword, each and every one of them would have been able to imagine that in their mind's eye. And so he comes and he starts off and he talks about putting the belt on. And so he says, you must start with the belt. And the question is, why start with the belt? And so we need to understand that this isn't a belt like a lady wears, you know, around like a fashion statement. I don't even know what those things are. It's not like a belt like Cornell you would wear. It's not like a belt that a handyman would wear with tools on, or even a police officer with a holster and a gun. No, it's a very unique and a very special kind of belt. And so if you imagine the armor that a Roman soldier would have worn, that armor would have weighed up to 30 kilograms. And so imagine that weight bearing down in battle and carrying it into battle and after battle. It would have been immense and hard work. And so the idea was to distribute that weight well. And so imagine if you distributed that weight over the shoulders here and you had to carry all that weight there. It's just not efficient and as effective as it should be. What you need to do is you need to understand that you need to distribute that weight around your core, and that your core needs to carry that weight. And if you can do that, you create a much more efficient and effective soldier. And so how do you do that? How do you get the weight of the armor to come and to bear in on the core of the soldier? Well, it's through a belt. And so that's why you start with the belt, because the belt holds the rest of the armor, or much of the rest of the armor, in place and together, and helps the soldier be sustainable for the fight for the long haul. And so he always starts with the belt, and we need to start with the belt. So that's the one side of the metaphor. The other side of the metaphor is a spiritual metaphor, where in Isaiah 59, God comes and talks about the armor, his armor that he wants to come and bestow upon his people. And this armor is spiritual armor, that we need to understand that the fight we're fighting, we cannot fight with our five senses. We cannot fight in the sense of the physical or in flesh and blood. We need to fight it in the spiritual realm, and we need to come and we need to depend upon God for that. And so what are those things? Well, it's things like truth and righteousness and peace and salvation. And what Paul does is he comes and he takes that physical metaphor and the spiritual metaphor and he links them together. And he comes and he forms the armor of God that we know so well. And he says you need to start first and foremost with the belt of truth. And the reason he starts here is because we need to know and understand that every battle that we face starts in the realm of what is true and what is not true, what is from God and what is not from God. And so we live in an age of cynicism in which everyone questions everything. And the more cynical you are, the more intellectual you are. And truth has become relative and malleable, and you can make it up as you go along, and it can change from one day to the next depending on your moods. And so truth in this day and age has no absolutes. And John Owen, the Puritan preacher from many years ago, warns us about this. He says, without absolutes revealed from without by God himself, we are left rudderless in a sea of conflicting ideas about manners, justice, and right and wrong, issuing from a multitude of self-opinionated thinkers. Without absolute truth, we cannot discern the difference between right and wrong, between justice and injustice, between equality and inequality. We need the absolute truth of God to come and to help guide us and lead us and to even help show us and discern the nature and the character of God. And without it, I'm certain society will implode upon itself. And so we have to fight for it. And so as I bring this into land, the question begs asking, what does this look like practically? And so I'm going to answer this under two headings as quick as I can. The first is under the heading of two voices in. The second is two choices out. And so two voices in is exactly what it sounds like, what we've been speaking about, that there are two voices coming into our lives. And when we say voices, it can be voices from other people, like Job's friends. It can be voices through media. It can be voices through books or through anything that we might read. It might even be voices in our own heads that come and torment us. But there are two voices that are coming in. One is a voice that is an echo of God's truth, and the other is a voice that is an echo of the lies of the devil himself. And we need to understand that there are these two voices. It's as basic as that coming into our lives. And if we had to come and look at the brokenness in the world, if we had to come and look at the brokenness in our lives, if we just had to take stock of some of the things we're facing, some of our anger issues, some of our depression or anxiety, some of our substance abuse or whatever it might be, if we had to come and look at the way we abuse people or speak to people or treat people, if we had to come and look at any brokenness that we're battling or that the world is battling, I'm telling you right now that each and every one of those scenarios or situations of brokenness, if you had to trace it back to its inception, way back at its inception, is a lie that someone has believed. And so the reality means then that the brokenness in your life that you're feeling, that you're experiencing, that there is a lie somewhere that you have believed and you've allowed it to take root in your life, and you need to deal with it today. You need to come and radically deal with it today. And so even the problem and the malady of mankind being separated from God, the brokenness that the world faces finds its root. And if you trace it all the way back to its inception, is a lie that Adam and Eve believed. And what they should have done in that moment was, when the devil said, you know, you could be like God, they should have said, actually, according to Genesis 1-2, we see the creation of mankind. We are like God. So thanks very much. Hit the road. That's what should have happened. But they didn't do that. But that's what Jesus comes and does, is he comes and he replaces the lies of the devil with the truth of God. And he combats the lies of the devil with God's truth. And that's what we need to do. And so in Romans chapter 12, verse 2, Paul comes and he says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. And so each and every one of us has to be, we have to embrace this challenge and we have to embrace this fight. And this is what it means putting on the belt of truth, is we need to come and renew our minds day in and day out. And we need to understand that there's this filter we have to place before our minds, where we filter in that which is from God and we allow it in, and that which is from the devil and we don't allow it in. In fact, 1 Peter 1:13 says this, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind And so this is a beautiful phrase that comes from the idea of a man back in biblical times wearing a robe, and if he had to run anywhere, or if he had to, you know, get as he was called to a moment of action, what he would do is he'd take his robe and he would take it and he would gird it in. He had tied in around him, so it was almost like a nappy around him, and he'd gird his loins there. And so Peter's using this phrase. He's saying what we need to do is we need to come and gird our minds. We need to come and put a filter around our minds so that we might be ready for action. And so we need to come and we need to go through some of the brokenness in our lives, trace it back to the lie that we've believed, and we need to come and refute it with the truth of God. And so some of you are saying, I'm worthless. I'm actually worthless. I'm hopeless. And you need to know that God says, I love you so much, John 3:16, that I sent my only begotten son to die for you. So how can you say you're worthless? Some of you are saying, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm big, I'm small, whatever it is. I've got a big nose. But God says, I knitted you together in your mother's womb. How dare you come and call something that God knitted together in your mother's womb ugly or unworthy? And so we need to come and we need to combat the lies of the devil with the truth of God. And so two voices in, we need to filter one of those voices out. And then the second response is two choices out. We got two choices out. And I want us to understand that we, in this life, in how we respond and treat other people and what we say and do to others, we can either come and be an echo of the voice of God and the truth that emanates from Him, or we can come and be a partner with the devil himself and echo his lies that go out. And so some of us need to understand that sometimes when we say things about people, we're coming and we're partnering with the devil himself, and we're spewing lies that are contrary to the truth of God. And so when you say someone's stupid, or when you say someone's an idiot, or when you come and say you're not worth it, or when you say you're never going to amount to anything, you're actually partnering with the devil to come and spew forth his lies. It's like you're a witness in the court of God, and you come in and say, yeah, the devil's right. He is dwarf. He is an idiot. He is never going to amount to anything. And so I want to come and to call us to come and to put a check on what comes out of our mouth and what we say, and to ensure that everything that comes from our mouth is an echo of God's truth and not resonating with the lies of the devil. And so James 3 verse 4 says, look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder. Wherever the will of the pilot directs, so also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire, and the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. And so as we end here, I want to ask you to take some time as we go into a worship song, to sit there, to sing, to hum, to do whatever you need to do, but do business with God. Maybe you need to come and put a bridle on your tongue, and maybe you need to sort that out so you're not partnering with the devil and proliferating this world with his lies. Or maybe there's some brokenness in your life that you need to come and just allow God's truth to come and soak up and to refute those lies that have been the source of that brokenness. And so at the end of this meeting, there's going to be a number that's going to come up on the screen. And if you want prayer, we'd love for you to get hold of us. And right now, this is Sunday morning, we'd love to pray with you. Send a message there, we'll get hold of you, and someone will get hold of you and pray with you and remind you of the truth of God. And so now as we go into the song, won't you do business with God? Let him come and meet with you. God bless.